So let me start with showing why this is true. So start out with this. Well, it's obviously true because the delta function is zero everywhere except when q is zero, and then that turns the thing in front turns to zero there, right? So we can take a derivative of that. And since this is identically zero, this is also zero. Sorry? Which one? The first one or the second? This one? A delta function is zero everywhere except when q is zero, right? But since there's a q in front of it, at zero, this is zero.
Okay, but is it more zero than delta in infinity?
Sorry? Oh, this is not a power, this is an index. Q is a vector of things, right? So for any, so since all the components of q are zero, specifically, q beta is zero.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, but that just means that on the vortex, that everything is zero, that's going to be zero, so it's an integral zero. As a distribution, it's an integral zero.
No, that just means that the value at zero is finite. It doesn't mean that.
With that argument, the integral of the derivative of the delta function is also zero. Because by parts, they're equal.
Right, so in the distribution sense.
Yeah, in the distribution sense.
It's zero. So basically, if you integrate this from with any choice of boundaries, you always get zero, right? So. So in that sense, this function is identically zero. And if that argument is not good enough for you, I'm sorry, but I won't have a better one.
I'm satisfied.
So basically, since this derivative also has to be zero, if it is identically zero, we get a relation. But the first one is just a Kronecker delta, right? Just a normal zero or one. Right. Next, we're going to use the commutation relation. In this form. Because this commutator here is just simply I delta alpha beta, and this other delta function comes from the inner product of the states. On the other hand, if we apply the Q in this commutator either to the left or to the right, depending on which side it's on.
There should be a prime there. Yeah. Delta Q minus Q prime.
Yeah, of course. Delta Q minus Q kind of doesn't make any sense. Okay. Okay, so can we rewrite this? But basically, inserting this relation into this one, we get this derivative on the dot function. And that means that we can write basically a differential equation for this thing that we want to find. So we have to integrate by parts. And why do I now suddenly get different sign? Oh, right. So I'm not integrating my parts. Sorry. Take that back. I don't really see where I do this sign wrong at this point. But basically, what I should be getting is a differential equation, basically. So when you do this integral, this delta function gets rid of the q prime here, and it turns into a q again. So we get... So the solution to this is basically this equation here with the normalization is conventional, the 1 over square root of 2 pi. So I don't really see why the sign isn't working. Or, well, basically, if you're going from here to here, so this line over here, this thing over here is basically a lie. That's what I want it to be. Is that what?
You just pulled up the derivative, right?
Sorry?
You just pulled up the derivative, right?
Where? What?
From.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so that was, there was no issue there.
Oh, right. There is no issue there. You're not integrating over q, so you can take the derivative outside of the integral, do the integral with the delta function. And
okay,
so
you just transfer the derivative to q prime, then it works out.
Sorry? What?
You write it as delta q minus q prime times derivative of
what? No, this is the derivative is acting on the delta.
The integrating.
No, so that's the thing. This is a derivative with respect to q, and this is an integral with respect to q prime, right? So it's not the same variable. So you take the derivative. Since this thing depends only on q prime, not on q, you can take the derivative outside of... so let the derivative act on the entire thing. Then you can take it out of the integral and perform the q prime integral. And then you get this. Okay. All right, we're going to need a definition here. So we're going to need this quantity in the path integral when we define it. So at different times. Right. So we're going to define a function h of q and p as numbers rather than operators, basically by evaluate by how this evaluates. I guess I can just put it. Oh no, wait, that doesn't. Okay, so so what is function h exactly is, that's, that depends on the formula Hamiltonian takes, but we just assume that, that we can order things in such a way that, that we can define this function h. It's always possible, but it's not not necessarily simply whatever you wrote down for h to be in terms of operators, because you may need to commute things to take to put it in this form. And this means that we can write what we had over here, so that becomes so now the path integral is basically to evaluate this quantity. And we're going to do this by inserting basically the unit operator in between this infinitely many times, essentially, when we take limit. So So basically, any factor of this is basically a factor of unity, and the same thing with the queues. So now, both this quantity and this quantity are what we just found here. So we can insert them.
You have a Q alpha P alpha, and then you combine the two exponents, but there's no Q zero P zero term in the exponent. Or is it that the Q and P are vectors and the Ti and Tj are like the zero, zero components?
Right, basically, so this is with an explicit split between space and time, right? Let's see this.
You're doing that for non-relativistic quantum mechanics, right?
Sorry?
This is the path integral for non-relativistic quantum mechanics.
Yeah, this is just for like Q, like the Q are canonical coordinates. So once we're going to do this for field theory, the Qs that I'm writing here are going to be your phis, and those Ps written here are going to be the pis. So those are not the four momenta of the field. So they're canonical variables. So now we're going to basically choose to have all the time steps the same. So replace all those just by delta t.
Why is it the same? Because when you're doing Q on the left and Q on the right, and then the rod gets switched in every second.
Sure.
That board over there?
Yeah, here.
The bottom board?
Here?
Yeah, how come the signs of the H of the last two terms in the product are the same? I don't see why.
Why do you think they should be different?
Because if they're in if the bond catcher switched to get the complex conjugate.
No.
Maybe not. Yeah.
No. So here you've got a Q n, you group, you know, n minus one. So this one gives the Q dot p, right? So the ones with the Q dot P have the P on the left, and the ones that give you the H have the P on the right. Because those are the ones with the time the same, and the ones that have the time different are all set up to have the Q on the left. So this is, if we take limit delta t to 0 and n to infinity. So this is basically the definition of what a path integral is. So basically, formally, we take the number of integrals that we do here to infinity, and that's what this symbol here is supposed to mean. This big D. Right. In order to go any further with this, we need to assume basically that the Hamiltonian is quadratic in the momenta. So basically, that means that this little h takes this form. And that means that the p integral turns into a product of Gaussians. So that means that we can actually do those integrals.
What's this last integral after dpn?
Dp double prime. Because it's basically labeled that because it's the momentum at the time t double prime. Okay. So so this is basically the basic Gaussian integral that we need to evaluate. So call this I. So that this n alpha beta is we'll take it to be symmetric because, well, it's not really an assumption there, right? Because it only appears multiplying p alpha p beta. And since we can choose it symmetric, that means that we can diagonalize it. So so if we do this rotation, we get so the problem is that this integral is ill-defined because it's oscillatory rather than damped with a normal Gaussian. So the way we're going to define this integral is by analytic continuation. So from basically
I think there should also be an I over there on the top.
Where?
Qti pdj is equal to qti e raised to the power I h hat pj minus pi pti.
You're asking about this?
Yeah.
This line? What?
Yeah.
Where do you want an I?
There. Instead of pdj, it should be pti. On the right hand.
Here and I?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So basically this this regularization. So, if the basic integral is this, then basically what happens is we replace d by d minus I epsilon, and that's damps this term over here, so that means that you get a convergent integral from it. Okay. So. Basically, with this regularization, we have that this integral. Into this. And if we use that in the integral that we actually have, then thank you. Okay, so the point of this is that we can write this as the classical Lagrangian because So using this, we can rewrite the Lagrangian. And we get exactly what's in the exponent there. Right. So so we finally have the expression that we were looking for. Where basically this vector over here is just the classical action. So and this vector n in front, I guess from Clips to music, right to curly n, so maybe I should do that. It's a prefactor that's basically infinite, but whenever you do any kind of calculation, you take ratios of those kinds of quantities, and the factor n is the same for any of those particles that you do. So they drop out of any of the answers that you when you actually calculate any expectation values. Yeah. So now we basically want to do this for field theory.
Liam, is your measure only DQ, or is there a DQ dot as well for your?
No, it's just DQ, right? Because here we have an integral over Q and P, and we perform the integral over P. So the only thing that's left is the integral over Q.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. And there's a Q dot in the Lagrangian, right?
Yeah, this was supposed to be a dot. Okay. So we're going to do basically now the path integral for a scalar field theory. I'm going to leave this up here, that's our final answer. So what we're going to be using is that now what we've been calling Q and T there, basically we now have to replace by fields. So we're going to be needing those two to insert. Which one? So if we want to construct Green's functions, we're going to need the vacuum to vacuum amplitudes. I guess I need to find the T star operator. So you all know the time ordering operator, right? Where basically operators are just ordered in, well, by time. The T star operator. The only difference is that if you just do the ordering with any theta functions, then if you take the time derivatives, if you take the time derivative of this, then you get delta functions whenever you hit those theta functions, right? So instead, the T star operator is one where basically you can pull in the time derivative and without getting all those delta functions. That's basically how T star is defined. The reason to do this is, well, first of all, because that's the quantity that we're actually interested in. So this, that's it naturally arises in path integral because the theta functions are not actually there in path integral. Right. So. So this thing over here, including those integrals, is basically the path integral that we have the result of over there. So in order to do anything with it in field theory, what we still need is basically the vacuum wave functions. So product of the vacuum with the fields. So we'll be writing this as so next thing to do is to find what those functions V are. So in order to do this, we need to basically define asymptotic fields. So they're basically behaving like free fields that asymptote to what the real fields are doing at t plus or minus infinity. So they're basically defined as so basically, they're defined as whatever the fields would be if you turn off V. So it's the free equation of motion. So we can write this in terms of creation and annihilation operators. So basically, we know that this holds for t going to plus or minus infinity. Uh, So we can, from this, we can basically construct what's the, what the, that's this, so this is the analog of the little a's over here for the full field. So basically, this a hat as so this property for the phi plus minus essentially works for a with the annihilation operator. Yes, the annihilation operator a. So that means that we can use this a hat to define what the vacuum is. Namely, we demand that at any time t, a hat annihilates the vacuum. So we can use this to find the vacuum wave function. Put it back down in a sec. Thank you.
Why do you need the time ordering operator for only one variable?
It's supposed to be a set of operators. So the A in between can be 1, 2, and any number of operators.
Oh, any
number. So basically the whole thing goes through for if you put in just an explicit field or a propagator. Or, so if you want a propagator, this A would be basically field of position A, 1, field of position 2, basically, for instance.
So you're writing, you're saying that this brand curly thing could be a product of operator.
Yeah. It's not going to fit. I was looking at what was the difference between the two lines. The difference was that one of them is wrong. And I forgot to cross it out. So basically this gives us a differential equation for what V of t is, because we can integrate this by parts to let the derivative hit V of t. And now we can do this this phi prime integral, because then we just have simple delta functions. And now we get really an obvious way to solve this, but somebody was smart enough to basically figure out a good guess, and that's what we're going to do. So. So now the question is what this epsilon of x and y has to be, the equation kernel here. And the differential equation for that, basically. Now we can basically relabel the integration variables here to make the argument of phi agree in both terms. So so basically, the solution to this is to get a book of special functions, and it turns out it's a modified Bessel function. Well, it can be written in terms of a modified Bessel function. Like this. Basically, we used the equation for EP, so that being square root of p squared plus m squared. Okay, so there's one more point about this that Cliff wanted me to make, but his notes are not as clear as he thinks they are, so I'm going to tell him that he's going to have to do that himself. Basically, the point is that this epsilon function, this means that we've now basically solved what the vacuum wave function is. And if we put this in and take the limit of t to plus or minus infinity for the in and out states, then we get the I epsilon prescription for the Feynman path integral basically comes out from taking that limit if you take the limit correctly. but the nodes, I don't understand exactly how they go here. It doesn't seem correct at first glance, so I'm going to defer this to Cliff. And it's about time anyway.
Okay.